My name is Chuck Dom. I'm a Dominican priest from Chicago. And I was invited to come to Dodge City this weekend to talk to the deacons and priests and social service ministers and to preach at the masses here at the cathedral. And I am delighted to be here. Both of our readings, the first and third today, emphasize marriage, of course. And it presents to us God's idea, which is our ideal. And that is that God created us, male and female, with a destiny that we are to join together and the two will become one, as Jesus says. And they will participate in the creation of the human family. That's our ideal. But unfortunately, in many cases, too many cases, the two do not become one because of many differences and perhaps because of abuse. Today I want to speak about one of those forms of abuse, which is domestic violence. It occurs behind closed doors. Very few people know who the victims are. It's a secret. And even if the family might know, they're afraid to talk about it because it is embarrassing or because they don't know what to do, where to go. But domestic violence is rampant in our society. It's at epidemic proportions. Every 15 seconds, a woman is hit in the United States. One out of every three or four women is hit at least once in her lifetime. Violence is the leading cause of injury to women between the ages of 15 and 44. And domestic violence accounts for more emergency room visits by women than rape or muggings or any other kind of accidents. It's epidemic. And it mostly occurs among women. Men, too, at times, are victims. But only about 5% of the victims of domestic violence are men. So my comments today are directed mostly about women. Many women who are victims of domestic violence don't even know they are victims. And that's probably because they have too narrow a definition. They only think it's physical violence. But in fact, domestic violence is a behavior pattern of power and control of one person over another. And there's different ways of doing that. One is physical. Force. One is economic. One is sexual. And of course, one that's perhaps the most common is emotional. It's verbal, or maybe even nonverbal. All these forms exist more than we believe. It's a learned behavior, something that men learn. It's not genetic, it's not inherited. They may have learned it in their family. But the good news is if it's learned, it can be unlearned. It can be cured. But generally, male abusers are resistant to change. They need to be confronted and held accountable. Frequently, they might excuse themselves with rationalizations such as, "Well, I'm under a lot of stress, I'm sorry," or "I was drinking too much," or "my drug habit came back." But drugs and alcohol and stress are not the cause of domestic violence. They aggravate it, make it worse, but the cause is really a decision to use a specific method to control the partner. It's very deliberate. Most women struggle to free themselves from domestic violence. Obviously, it's not a happy experience, but it's difficult to do. Many people can't understand, why don't they just get up and leave him? But it's not so easy. Many are ashamed to leave because it'll be known that they chose somebody who was an abuser. They failed in their marriage. And for them, that's too embarrassing. Some believe that they can't make it. They won't survive economically without their mate's support. Others don't want to separate their children from their father. And in fact, abusers frequently use children, showering them with gifts and attention so that they stay close to him and will resist any efforts by his partner to separate from him. Often women victims interiorize the emotional or verbal abuse that they hear, meaning that they begin to believe the things they are told. They may say, well, it's true. I am incompetent. I am ignorant, helpless. I'm ugly. I don't look good. Their confidence, their self-confidence disappears. Their self-esteem is on the floor. They can't help themselves very easily. Most victims of domestic violence, in fact, try to please their abuser to no end. I mean, they make every effort to placate him, make sure the house is clean, the children are well organized, the food is on the table and ready, deliciously and very well presented, everything they can to make sure that he will not get angry. They walk on eggshells. But they are motivated by fear, completely dependent upon the whims and moods of their abusers. And they try to avoid these explosions of violence or anger, and that means they're living in an oppressed situation. I remember one woman that I knew, very active in her church, married to a police officer for a few years, and they celebrated Thanksgiving Day. Her family came over, and later that night he said to her, if your family and you ever do this, whatever they did that day, again, I will kill you. Of course, he had a revolver in the house. And from that day forward, every year when they celebrated Thanksgiving Day, she remembered that threat. And she lived in constant fear for 30 years before she freed herself. Domestic violence can also be economic, especially for women who work at home. They don't have any income. They have to receive money from their spouse. And frequently he will dole it out very miserly because, of he will say, she is not competent to organize or handle money well. The abuser finds full accountability, demands full accountability to the last penny, often. Sexual abuse occurs much more than we recognize. Husbands frequently oblige their wives to watch pornography. They think it's going to help their relationship, where in fact it disgusts their partner, or that they have to wear certain kinds of clothes or participate in certain activities which the women find offensive. Different forms, but all domestic violence. Not too long ago, I had one case that came to me. A man called me and wanted an appointment very urgently. And so I met with him on Sunday, and he brought his wife, and he said, Father, my wife is unfaithful. She's always looking at other men. And this week, I came home, and I found the back door open. I went into the yard, back to the alley. I saw another man that's a neighbor, and I said, "Did you see someone here?" And he said, "I think I did." He came back into the house, and I knew that there was someone in my house. He said, "This is too much. That's why I brought my wife here, so you will talk to her, and she will, so that she will be faithful to me." I asked him to step out of the chapel, we were meeting in the chapel after Mass. And I asked her, I said, "Well, how long have you been married?" She said, 10 years. "And has he been this jealous for 10 years? "Oh, yes." And I said, "Well, when you were dating, before you were married, was he jealous?" "Yes, very much so." I said, "Well, why did you marry him?" "Well, I thought if I married him, I would be with him every day and every night, and there wouldn't be no room for jealousy." But it just continued. And I said, "Well, it's not jealousy. It's a form of controlling you and keeping you subject to him." They have 3 children. So I asked her, "Well, do you work?" She said, "I did work once for 6 months, and then he made me stop because he thought perhaps I was developing relationships with men at the factory." I said, "Well, do you learn English?" She's a Hispanic woman. "He won't let me learn English." "Do you know how to drive?" "He won't let me drive." "Do you have many friends?" "No, he won't let me go out." "How does he treat you sexually?" "Well, he's actually becomes very gentle and cariñoso, no, very kind and endearing, but it doesn't make any sense." "How about language? What does he say to you?" She said, "Father, I can't use the words that he uses on me. That I would be too embarrassed to say them." So we see in this case, she really had not been hit, but she had suffered tremendous emotional and economic abuse. And she had not suffered sexual abuse. I asked for her permission, invited him back into the room alone, and I confronted him. And he had to admit part of what she had said. I invited both of them into our parish program of counseling. He to come into the men's group where they deal with violence and anger, and she into the women's group, which deals with strengthening her self-esteem and ability to make decisions for herself. These cases happen all too frequently. This woman, I don't know if she ever would have come to me, but he did. Thanks be to God. After episodes of violence or yelling, explosions, frequently the man will ask for forgiveness. He will be remorseful. He might bring flowers, might take her out to dinner. This is generally referred to as the honeymoon stage and frequently doesn't last very long because tension will build again until there's another explosion and then there's another repentance. And so there's a circle of violence that takes place. Unfortunately, our church has been somewhat complicit in all of this, because we've never really addressed domestic violence very clearly. The national bishops did not make a statement until the mid-90s. We don't hear sermons about domestic violence. How many of you have ever heard a sermon about domestic violence? But I bet you heard a lot of sermons about marriage, about what the ideal is and how we have to live in peace and love. But we don't hear about, well, what do we do when it's not that way? And I criticize myself in this regard because as a young and middle-aged priest, I didn't see it. Somebody had to open my eyes. And it was the pastoral counselor that I hired onto my parish staff. She made me see that almost all of her clients, all her female clients, were victims of domestic violence, and I had no idea. It was only then that I began to speak about it. Frequently, abusers will use the scriptures like the one we heard today to justify their dominance over their partner. After all, God made woman from man's rib. He was created first. She was taken from his rib. We've heard St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians about how women should be subject to their husbands. These words are frequently cited by abusers. I know in my ministry, which is primarily in the Hispanic community, a lot of violence occurs among the parents, and the children learn it. And mothers often tell their daughters, I had to bear my cross with your father, and now it's your turn to bear your cross. This is another appeal to faith to put up with it instead of resolving it or leaving it. As we hear the scriptures today talk about the ideal, we must strive for that ideal, but at the same time, we must be concerned for the safety and well-being of everyone, even those who are in some relationship which is not healthy, especially those. The church condemns all forms of domestic violence and does not want anybody to continue to live in that situation. Our church must respond to help victims, to help free them. They're the ones that free themselves, but we must support them in their struggle for freedom, safety, and peace. As a community of faith here at the cathedral, we all have to do this. I'm sure many of you know victims of domestic violence, or at least you have suspicions. You should follow up on those suspicions and express your concern and your willingness to be of help in any moment. Generally, victims of domestic violence are isolated from others. They do not know where to turn. I'm encouraged because Father Ted is interested in developing a ministry to victims of domestic violence. I help promote ministry to victims of domestic violence in the Chicago Archdiocese as a member of the Archdiocesan Task Force on Domestic Violence. And I would like to ask anybody here who would be interested in reaching out to victims of domestic violence to put your name and phone number back on a piece of paper in the lobby of the church. And tomorrow at 6 o'clock, I will meet with you to discuss how you can develop some kind of service program or outreach to victims of domestic violence. All of us know that Jesus was compassionate to anyone who suffered, whether it be lepers or other sick people, whether it be women who had the flow of blood, other women, children, we heard here, foreigners, people of other religion. He was a man of ultimate compassion. And we as a church, living the life of Jesus, must show that compassion here in Dodge City so that anyone who comes across a victim of domestic violence can say, I know, you can go to Our Lady of Guadalupe. They will help and support you because they understand domestic violence. Let us commit ourselves today as a church, but also individually, to reach out to all those who suffer this violence so that they might experience love and peace in their own lives.